Hello, everybody. peace sign. Welcome back to Bag is Bag. It's been a very, very long break from the pod, but I'm starting to bring back new people. Gotten some exciting guests and lineup coming for you all. Today we have Martin with us. Thank you so much for accepting to come for this pod.
It's my pleasure. The uncles call, I come running,
That's good to hear. So today, what we'll do before we get started, normally as usual, we'll just play for icebreakers, we'll play three rounds of categories, and the winner gets, what does the winner get? There's always a wager.
The winner gets free entry to the next uncle's party, or vice versa.
that's true. So 16th, November 16th, and ours is December 6th. Well,
December 6th. Unfortunately, I can't make it. I'm DJ, but we'll see.
Okay, so I'll just take a So I'll mention the category, and then. Mm-hmm. Then we go back and forth, and then whoever snoozes.
All right, if you snooze, you lose.
All right. So the category is famous people.
Okay.
Famous people that you know. Selena right. Gomez.
OJ.
Rema.
Dave Chappelle.
Kris Jenner.
Chris Brown.
Kevin Hart.
Kevin Little.
Kevin Systrom.
The fuck is that?
That's Instagram's founder. That's Instagram's founder.
Okay.
I know, you've already lost.
I've lost, yeah. I was like, that. You said the famous people that we know.
Famous
I can literally say any name.
Actually.
I can say any name. I'll be like, yeah, you don't know that guy. That guy's famous.
Well, actually, you are famous, so
I could have said my name.
Okay, let's go on that round. Let's
okay, so you pick next?
No, pick. Yeah, okay. Pick.
Okay, the category is WWE wrestlers.
Damn.
Brock Lesnar.
Triple H.
John Cena.
Booker T.
How many seconds do you have?
You've lost. You snooze.
No, I was literally just wondering so that I know how long to think.
Damn, I had plenty in the arsenal. Do you want to go again?
I don't know that many wrestlers.
Okay, pick one, yeah.
Okay, I don't know that many wrestlers. Okay, let's try this one. Jesus Christ.
Which one is this? Let's go. No, you don't. What was that?
Jesus.
Cryptocurrencies.
Jesus, what the fuck is this? Do you work for this company?
Oh, this is my card game.
You made this
game? Yeah,
yeah. This is not fair. I don't know if you played against the person that made the game. Okay.
I've actually lost on every.
Alright, let's go.
Okay.
Harry Potter characters.
Damn, okay.
Harry Potter.
Snapes.
Snape. Hermione.
Dumbledore.
Hagrid.
Malfoy.
Malfoy Senior.
Harry Potter Senior. No, that was his dad's name. Fuck.
his dad's name was not Harry Potter. Malfoy was.
Yeah.
Malfoy.
But Malfoy Senior, his dad.
Yeah. His name was Malfoy.
His first name was Malfoy.
You didn't say
Malfoy. I'll catch you next time.
One.
Okay, last round. Let's do something. I don't know if you should do Justin Bieber songs.
Jesus, no.
No.
Make it
This is. Okay, so I mean, this one, we're inclined to this one, so
okay.
Hopefully we should have something.
Okay.
Music streaming services that you know. The category is music streaming services.
Okay.
Deezer.
Boomplay.
Apple Music.
Spotify.
AudioMac.
Tidal.
Amazon Music.
Deezer.
I said Deezer.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know.
You win. Well done.
I win. So, I'm coming on the 16th.
Well done.
A freak like me.
Let's go.
I see you are repping.
I'm repping. You're repping. I'm always repping. Stay repping.
Oh, wait. So, a freak like me, 5.0, are you selling the merch?
Yeah.
How much is the merch?
And right now, it's $40 for the tees, $80 for the hoodies.
Okay.
Once they arrive.
Oh, it's going on. It hasn't arrived yet.
It's pre-order.
Pre-order. It's pre-order. Oh. How long will it take to...
It's going to be available on the day of the event.
Okay.
So most people will just pick theirs up
as
they show up.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Sweet.
So that's the setup.
It will be cool if you know, plenty of people can wear it on the day of...
That's kind of tacky, you know? You know, you don't like you. Everyone wants to like show up in their like special new attire on a day where like they're the only ones that are rocking it. You want to show up to a place, you're the only one wearing the tee that
day. Yeah.
But it's not. It doesn't hit as hard when like everybody's just wearing the same tee.
Oh, okay.
At the same time, so you know, you take your package, take it home, and then you bust it open on a very special day.
Sweet. Yeah. I wanted to go into asking about what your target audience look like, because you know, I'm thinking of these teas, people coming to buy their tea. Mm-hmm. How you all have defined your target, you know, audience. But before we get into that, because before you define your target audience, you have to know where you're coming from.
Okay.
So let's go to where you are coming from. So we have Martin here with us. Martin, can you please just give us a quick summary on, you know, who you are, what you do, maybe why you do what you do.
Okay,
just let the audience know who Martin is.
That's a lot of questions. Yeah. I thought the first question was going to be, Martin, what is your bag?
So it's what you do. So
is your bag?
Your bag is what you do.
Okay, yeah. Okay, fine.
What do you do?
Yeah. Let me first attempt. Today I had to write a bio. I have a bio, but I have not bothered to update that thing in like 3 years now. And every time that somebody asks me for my bio, it's always the same struggle. Like trying to figure out what to like update in that document. But about me, my name is Martin. My middle name is Sesinu. That's how you get Martin Ses.
Yeah.
I'm Nigerian. I'm from Lagos State.
And
as it has to do with Canada, obviously living, you know, a dream my parents had for me to make sure that, you know, we're good, we're not in a struggling society.
Oh, yeah.
So I've lived in Canada since I was 18 years old.
Oh, yeah?
I went to, did a little bit of high school, did university before moving to Toronto.
Oh, okay.
So it was when I was in Toronto working, I worked as a business analyst, software development for just over 9 years.
Oh, yeah.
And during that time is when I became a fashion designer and a DJ and musician.
Oh, so all the attires that you wear, you design?
Yeah, they're custom. Most of them are custom pieces.
Oh, yeah.
One of ones.
Oh, okay. So, you know, now you mentioned a couple of bags. You said software engineer, fashion designer and DJ. What's your current bag?
So right now, like, I would say I'm an all-round creative. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mostly act in the role of a producer.
Okay.
Of like different forms of like media. So video work, music, and experiences.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so all of those require a production role, and I mostly act in that capacity.
Oh. So you wouldn't label yourself as maybe, because I know Martin as a DJ, so you wouldn't label yourself like a DJ.
Yeah, that's a very tiny part of the work that I do.
Oh, I see.
I'm mostly like a producer of experiences, visual content, and music.
Oh, okay. So how did you get into this? Because, you know, you spoke about like software engineering, and I'm a software engineer too, and, you know, going into that field, you are very comfortable around computers and know how to like use the tooling. How did you get introduced into this creative aspect? How did you move into that from software engineering?
Okay, so I was in the grind, you know. I used to go to work. Pause.
Oh, pause. Oh yeah. Oh, we have to move. Oh damn. Okay.
All right. We're back.
We're here.
So I was in the grind every day. I used to go to work. So at some point, you know, it became a little bit of a monotony, and I'm always looking for ways to be myself.
Oh yeah.
Like, I've always had that very strong sense of self. I just can't be comfortable, you know, just being just another Joe. So yeah. that was what really, you know, pushed me into making clothes.
Okay.
I just wanted to make what I felt.
Oh, you started out from clothes.
Style, yes.
Oh, okay.
So I picked up a sewing machine and started like learning how to make clothes.
Okay.
So obviously that process takes a while, and you know, it was a trial and error. But in no time, I was wearing my own custom clothes to work, yeah, or to whatever functions I was doing, and that obviously quickly spiraled into making clothes for other people.
Oh yeah.
And that spiraled into making clothes for artists. So now, DJs especially wanted me to make clothes for them.
Who were the first set of like people that reached out? How did they?
One of the first people I made clothes for was Revy B.
Oh yeah, we know Revy B, yes, here in Toronto.
So I made clothes for Revy B. There were other guys, like I had done stuff with Damager, TK Smooth.
Okay.
Back then, that's how I knew TK. That's how I met Donnie.
Okay. Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, a stylist had reached out to me and said, "Oh, we need some of your pieces for a shoot that she's doing."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, I've heard of Donnie. I want to meet her." So
okay.
I went to the shoot. So Donnie and I are like tight now.
So yeah.
And we've worked together.
What's like the process for you in making these clothes? Like, you bought a machine. Do you sew like every piece yourself, or do you like design,
yes,
and maybe do a concept and give it to like a
house?
Got
to that point.
Okay.
Later down the line, but yes, I was making everything from scratch. Like,
okay.
I'd go source fabric.
Oh yeah.
And then make a design and attempt to sew it.
Yeah.
So that is really difficult when you're not like trained.
Okay.
So I was just winging it.
Okay.
So it made it difficult, like without like a lot of the resources that you'd have access to if you had maybe gone to school for it.
Mm-hmm. I see.
It's not just the skills you get. You get a lot of like knowledge about resources.
Yeah, where to like materials,
yeah, exactly,
where to source materials, what the whole logistics process is.
Exactly.
True. Yeah.
So I didn't have a lot of those, but it made my journey a bit more difficult, but I'm the type of person that I find a way.
Oh, okay.
It was just very time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere like 2 years into this whole situation, because I think I started making clothes in like 2017.
Okay.
Right, somewhere around there. And then in 2019, after I had met Donnie,
yeah,
we decided to go to a party in the summer. It was an Afro House party.
Okay.
The name of the event was Afro House, run by this lady, Sarah Jane Reigler.
Okay.
So that was where I met Razak.
Oh, yeah.
And when I met Razak, it was just like, there was a sense of deja vu when I heard what he was playing. I was like, this sounds so familiar, like something I've always wanted to do.
Oh.
So it was just like literally like one or two songs I heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked up to him, I was like, "Yo, bro, like, good, nice to meet you, but like, I want to do what you're doing. Like,
I see.
This is crazy."
Oh, okay.
And obviously, I know how many DJs have told me that. I've heard that before. Like, lots of people would tell you,
yeah,
"I want to be a DJ." And that was like, let's say that was like July ish.
Mm-hmm.
By September, I had created my own event.
Oh wow. So you, when you started DJing, like, you did not think of it as maybe you wanted to go DJ for other people's events.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you wanted to just
like
go.
The only person I ever even bothered to like go to and say, "Hey,
you,
I want to DJ," was a week after I picked up a controller. I went to TK because, like I said, I knew him at that time, and he was like a big time event organizer then, and DJ. And I was like, "Hey man, like, do you mind if I like play a couple of like opening slots for you?"
Okay.
Because he had a Sunday residency at that time.
Yeah.
But like, I played one time. It was a shit show.
Do you care to share? How was that? Did you, you know, is it that the audience, like, were you just...
No, there was barely, there wasn't an audience. Like, it was just my friends. Like, I had, like, maybe 3-4 friends that showed up, like, early.
Oh, yeah.
Because this was, oh, like, you were 4 opening. P.m. Yeah, oh, okay. It was, like, 4 p.m. at a day party.
Yeah.
When there was nobody there, and I played for, like, an hour.
Oh.
And so there was the staff of the establishment and, like, a couple of my friends.
Okay, I see.
That were there. But I was like, okay.
That was your first, like, live...
That was the first time I was DJing somewhere.
Okay.
Right, I've been DJing at home, you know, going IG live.
I think it's very different. It's very different when you're practicing, because probably when you were practicing, it was good to an extent. But when you go live,
that's the thing. I don't get performance anxiety. I get performance enhancement.
Even the first time you did it,
yeah.
Okay,
like when I in front of people, yeah. I do better.
I see.
Than when I'm doing something by myself.
Oh.
Well, so okay. It's interesting like that.
Oh yeah.
So when I say it was a shit show, I could now see like what the how far I had to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been playing at home, but you're not really playing, you know,
for
people.
Okay, yeah.
And like you're not really, you're just trying to play stuff that you like. So now that you have to think about like playing songs, like, okay, is that person going to like this song?
Oh yeah, trying to read the
read the room, or like see if people are enjoying what you're doing.
You know this thing called Serato face, where the DJ is just looking at their computer.
Yeah.
Is that because now you're always, when I see you, you're looking at the audience, you're reading the room, looking at your laptop. Is that what you had then? You know, when you're not like reading the audience.
So then I used to prepare my sets.
Okay.
So I would like say, these are the songs I want to play, and this is the order I wish I'm going to play them. So I almost memorized like everything down to the cue points.
Okay.
I had like a mathematical approach to like how I was going to play the set. It was like ones and twos and threes and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So it wasn't much of that. It was that now you have all that in place, and executing it while trying to like say, okay, how is this working on the floor?
Oh, yeah.
So I realized that I needed to go like learn a lot more. That's why I say it was a shit show. There was no one there to like judge me or anything.
So now you don't have like you don't have a set list. I mean, you have a set list, but you don't memorize the order. Like, you read the room and move based off what
you
see.
So now we have crates.
Okay, yeah.
So based on, like, what you think you're going to go play there, you, like,
you just
stuff in a crate.
Yeah.
And then you work based on, like, energy.
Oh, okay.
So that's...
So we've veered off now into your DJ bag. But yeah,
I was trying to finish how like I got to being a DJ.
Okay. Yeah.
So that first event
that
I did was called Black Magic. It was actually a fashion show.
Oh.
It was a fashion show, but I the plan was that I would DJ while the models were like.
That's walking. I've had that kind of idea before. That's cool. That's way.
So that was the first thing I thought of. Like,
did you get the inspo from anywhere? Or
I mean, like, I had seen like maybe like Victoria's Secret.
Oh, that is the musician sings.
Yeah,
and
where
then,
they sing while the models are on the runway.
Oh,
so I was like, I want to do something like that for my
DJ
for my fashion line. But it wasn't about the DJ. It was about the clothes.
Okay.
So I wanted to walk like have models and like, just have an experience of like people coming to see stuff that I had made.
Oh yeah.
It was a collaboration with like a little like coffee shop / community center.
Okay.
Around like it was on Yonge Street, around this area actually, just up the road from here.
Oh, okay.
So so Razak came to that.
Okay.
Just off Instagram. It was just like, yeah, let me go check out what this guy's doing. So after he saw me play there.
Yeah.
He sent me a message. It's like, hey bro, let's like talk. I have an idea.
Oh, okay.
And by November, so this was September.
Yeah.
So we had a meeting in October.
Okay.
And then by November 17th, 2019, that was when the first Freak Like Me happened.
Oh, so I'm curious about that event that you put together. What did the promo look like? Was it already just leveraging of the connections you've made from your fashion?
Yeah, it was just a fashion thing. Okay. It was people that came to see my close friends.
Oh yeah.
Mostly friends.
Oh yeah. Was this had you just released like a line, and how many clothes were in the line?
There was about 12 pieces.
Oh, okay.
In that collection. And yeah, up to that day, like, I didn't even know who the models were gonna be. Like, people literally just volunteered to like wear some of the pieces.
Yeah.
When they came, so okay. Some of them were like jackets, some of them were like pants and like two pieces.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, I know your style. Like, most, I don't know if it's the material is sort of like Ashoke. I don't know if you. If
that's
you,
more recent.
Oh, that's more recent. So what? Yeah. You know, type of material, like what, how did your fashion like style evolve, and are you still like heavily, you know, doing fashion now?
So first of all, how did my fashion evolve? When I started, I was into like a lot of patterns.
Okay.
Patterns and what we call wax fabric, which is like
wax fabric.
Wax What's fabric that? Is a what do they call it? Why is the name skipping my head? What we call like African fabric.
Oh, is it like Senegalese?
Not Senegalese.
Kaftan.
Not that. There's a term for it, but
Ankara.
It's Ankara, yes.
Oh, that's what you.
So
okay.
I used to make a lot of stuff with Ankara.
Okay.
Then, so what I wanted to do at that time was like find like very unique like Ankara styles.
Okay.
Just like the really flowery ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really trying to find like unique ones, though that wasn't easy to find here.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like looking if I can find some stuff in like Lagos and like bring it down here, but obviously that's expensive. Okay. So it was a lot of like, I was going through the motions then.
Okay.
But yeah.
Oh, I see. And now it has moved towards, I don't know if it's Ashoke, but it looks thick.
Yes. So now I use like a lot of Ashoke because like that's what, you know.
Yeah.
The OGs used to rock, and it's hand. Actually, most of the Ashoke that I'm using, they're hand woven fabrics in Nigeria, so it's truly.
Do you supervise that?
No, they're not. I'm not making custom hand woven fabrics.
Okay.
I'm buying hand woven fabrics.
It's expensive, from what I know, like because people use it for like weddings a lot.
So the inspiration for a lot of like that line that I had started wearing like sometime last year.
Yeah.
Was reusing clothes that my parents had worn.
Oh, okay.
Or that even maybe it's myself, because I noticed that in my parents' wardrobe, there was a lot of clothes that they would wear once for an occasion,
mm-hmm.
and you can't really wear it again.
I can relate, yeah.
So I started to take those clothes, like the really nice ones,
okay,
and remake them into like clothes that I could wear.
Oh, okay.
So that was the origin of a lot of the stuff that you're referring to now.
Oh, yeah. What we see you wearing, okay.
My parents' old clothes.
Oh, yeah.
Just like taken and like remodeled into like something I could wear now.
I see most of the style is sort of like it's free at the bottom and then it hugs you. Like, where do you take the inspiration for? Like, the top sort of like wraps you sort of, and then the pants are free. Where do you take that inspiration from?
Three unique like pieces.
Oh yeah.
That I typically wear. The pants are just like modeled after like boot cuts.
Oh
when
yeah.
When I was in secondary school, boot cuts was.
Okay. It has come back.
Yeah,
it's kinda,
come back.
Yeah.
Small. But I like brought. I started wearing that before the trend started going that way.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was what was cool in secondary school then.
Oh, okay.
And also when, if you look at old pictures of your parents, if your parents are like the same age as mine,
yeah.
That was like what they were rocking in their like heyday.
Oh, okay.
So it was those two things combined that made me get into the like bell bottom pants.
Oh.
And then my tops, I loved like diagonal shapes.
Oh.
So whenever I design myself any tops,
okay,
they're always diagonal.
There's always a cross.
It's always a cross.
Okay.
And then for my jackets, that they resemble kimonos, but they're not. They're not kimonos. Oh. But and that's just like anime.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Just like an anime influence.
Oh, you watch anime. Okay.
I think, let me be very specific, it was Naruto specifically. It was Naruto in Sage Mode. That exact style is from.
Yeah.
And it ties back into like what my original like persona was.
Okay.
Which was like what I got into DJing for was to tow a line of like Nigerian electronic music.
What, you know, I think from Afro House, there's a lot of like the instruments that when you hear it, it takes you back to some of what we hear, like the very olden day music. Like it takes, I don't know if that's what like spoke to you.
So I'll make some distinctions.
Yeah.
Afro House is mostly a South African genre.
Okay.
In its nature, though a lot of other Africans have created Afro House.
Oh yeah. But
its origins are Southern African.
Oh.
So when I'm speaking of like Nigerian electronic music, I'm thinking of a strand of music that is developed out of like our own either traditional sounds or like older music.
Okay.
Things that we've inherited from like musicians that came before us.
Okay.
So that's what I'm talking about, not necessarily Afro House, though.
Okay.
The most popular genre in African electronic music at the moment is Afro House.
Oh yeah.
So obviously we would play those genres.
Okay.
But my primary goal was to ferment our own strand of electronic music.
Okay.
And there was precedent for it.
Oh yeah.
And it's mostly from like the music, and that was like the disco era.
Mm-hmm.
So a great example would be William Onyeabo.
I don't know that person, but
so you know. William Onyeabo was like a relatively popular musician.
Okay.
Back in the 70s.
Okay.
And he was making like a strand of like house, or you can call it like disco. But it's synthesizers, it's drum machines, and all of that. But making like either music in local language or just like, just the way music was performed in the 70s.
Yeah.
So we are taking inspiration from those areas and even stuff that was made in the 90s. Then trying to like create this brand of electronic music.
Oh yeah.
So that's what Razak had created.
Also, he produces music.
Yes,
too.
He's a producer and like artist. So he was basically playing his own music when I heard it, and I was like, I wanted to do just that.
Okay.
So if you have listened to like anything that I've made, it's also has that like nostalgic factor to it.
Oh yeah.
And I also just added, I would sing in Yoruba.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There's this Yoruba, but I would mix it up, but I just bunch it all under Afro House, but it's called them Ode Ireti. Would you say that's along the line?
That's house.
Oh, that's just house. Yeah. Okay.
Like electronic, like eco electronic is what we call it. Right?
Did you guys carve it out?
Yes. That was something that Razak had released a project called Eco-Electronic as a Genre.
Yeah.
Just before, around the time that I met him. And that's what I've like modeled.
Okay.
The stuff that I made like after.
Yeah. Okay. So so in your events now, do you play mostly your own type of music, or you combine a lot? And what has been the receptance to this echo electronic type of music?
Because it's a very like niche thing.
Yeah.
It's not something like when you're playing in front of like an audience as diverse as what we have at A Freak Like Me, it's not the primary focus.
Okay.
We play the mandate that we have at A Freak Like Me is we're creating an experience with African electronic dance music.
Okay.
So it cuts across a lot of genres.
Oh yeah.
It's not just like.
What are the genres? Can you?
There's the dominant ones. Yeah. House. Afro, yeah, house. Yeah. Afro tech.
Okay.
Kwang.
Where does that originate from?
They're also South African genres. Okay. Right. There's also like kuduro that we throw in, which kuduro. Is like kuduro.
Kuduro.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is like very French African.
Okay.
Right. So they cut across like broad parts of the diaspora too.
Okay.
Not just like African countries. Oh, yeah. Like Portugal, Brazil.
Oh.
They all like and a lot of the Afro house too is like originates from like the post-slavery states, which is like in the Caribbeans.
Oh, okay.
And like Brazil, Portugal. Yeah. They also make a lot of like Yoruba speaking,
yeah,
house.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, where most of it comes from. Not Nigeria.
So I want us to just go back, not go back so much, but to, you've met Razak, but you know, Afrique Like Me is three people.
Yes.
How did that group come about? How did you all now decide you want to, you know, did you solely focus on or want to be creating events, or the three of us together will make music as one unit? Because I know, you know, you produce your own, and is it individual? Like, how did that group come about, and what was the first line of, or we just want to solely make music, or want to do events? For example, Uncles, we were like, oh, we want to do events. And that's where we're still like along the line. Anything that comes up after is, you know, is.
Okay, yes. So like I said, it started as two of us.
Yeah.
Right? It was myself and Razak for just under a year.
Okay.
And obviously, COVID hit.
Yeah.
Beginning of 2020.
Okay.
So it was in the summer of 2020 was when Anwar joined.
Okay.
A Freak Like Me. It was just something we decided to do. I had a third member, and it just happened to be Anwar.
Okay.
That we decided to bring on to. And that just felt right. Like, it felt like now we're whole.
Oh, okay.
And obviously, our mandate has always been the same. It's like an African electronic dance music experience.
Okay.
And everything just sort of comes under that.
Okay.
The music that we make, or us being producers and artists,
yeah,
us running events, or us being a DJ trio,
okay,
is all under that umbrella.
Yeah.
Us being a DJ trio is something that happened over time.
Okay.
It was a solution to a problem.
What was the problem?
There's three DJs.
Who would take what slots?
Who, like, how do we even fit other guests into our events when there's three of us?
Oh yeah.
To play.
Okay.
So when this was not a problem for a long time, because we were mostly doing like quarterly events.
Okay.
So whenever we do our events, it wasn't that big a deal. We would have like one guest DJ.
Yeah.
And initially, since Anwar started DJing when she joined A Freak Like Me, or after she joined A Freak Like Me. So she was like a new DJ, so at least it was just me and Razak.
Training her.
No, not really training her, just like that had to play.
Okay.
Like, during the party.
Maybe. Okay.
So then it wasn't much of a consideration. But when we all became like full-fledged DJs,
okay,
now it was like, how do we even figure out a lineup?
Oh yeah.
When we have a guest and then there's three of us that are going to play at this party.
I see.
So when we got our first residency, we're doing monthly events now and even playing multiple times like a month.
Okay.
We decided to just play at once.
Oh, okay.
So where we would have to like schedule 3 hours.
Yeah.
It was now down to an hour.
Oh. How do you coordinate the practice?
There was no such thing.
There was no, so you just.
It was just like the first time we played together was like one of those days we ran out of time, because we had the event. Obviously, people come late, and then the event starts like 11:30.
Oh yeah.
So now you have the first DJ play 11:30, 12:30. Second DJ plays 12:30, 1:30.
Okay.
The club is going to close at 2:30.
Oh yeah.
So we all just played at once.
How do you coordinate? Oh, this is what I want to play next. You know, you because you're selecting. Oh, I want to play this next. So you have to keep talking to yourselves. Like,
yeah, we talk. Like, if you ever watch this play,
yeah,
we're talking. We're just like vibing.
Oh yeah.
But now we needed to elevate technically, in order to make it like sound cohesive.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. So it's a skill that, like, I found that. Because of doing that,
mm-hmm.
I can, these days I play with anybody. Like, a lot of the time when I'm playing, to save time, I play back to back with my guest DJs.
Oh, I see.
Just because I can.
Yeah, you just, like, you already learned the skill to, like, build, like, sync with
build another. Build rapport. Oh, like, okay. you can either set the tone or mm-hmm. let the other person set the tone, and you just do what DJs do. You follow it up.
Oh, okay. So, for example, now, you like if I because we play, I wouldn't necessarily play different type of music. You can play my type of music. Mm-hmm. I've not necessarily veered off into the Afro electric music that mm-hmm. you play. But if you wanted to sync with me now, I'm playing mm-hmm. strictly Afro beats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you easily do that?
I can easily do that. If you were playing and. It's a number of things. There's a number of factors that play. It's like the floor.
Oh yeah.
What genre are we playing?
Okay.
What's the energy that we need to maintain? So now you use your DJ ABCs. Like,
okay.
What's the tempo we're going at? What's the key we're playing at?
Oh yeah.
What vibe are we trying to set?
Okay.
And then you look into your library and bring something that fits that criteria to the best of your ability.
Okay.
And now you just mix.
Oh.
So I found that this works quite well when you're playing the type of music we play, where it's like it's deep house.
Okay.
So you're not moving very quickly.
Okay.
The pacing matters.
Okay.
So you are like, the songs are built to ride, so it's much easier to blend.
Oh yeah,
when you're playing these genres,
okay,
as opposed to if you're playing like
Afrobeat, where you just have like
where it's like
you have to be going back to back.
It's speed. It's like, how many tracks can I hit these people with in the space of 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Whereas it's like, what in deeper genres is like, what route am I trying to take to the peak?
You can't really surprise the audience in your blends. Is that
Yes, you're trying to make your blends as smooth as possible.
One continuous song throughout, like for 1 hour, it feels like one continuous song.
It's one train of thought.
So
though, like, one thing that has set us apart, and this is from like several people, and it's something we did on purpose too, is we interrupt a lot. We interrupt that to like insert Nigerian music.
Oh yeah.
We are playing house, or we're playing like deep house, but we would slap African music, like Nigerian music.
Yeah, maybe you could like one or like an arm up. Yeah.
Or you put like.
Would you like blend it into, you know, their. You know, I take for example Peru now. Peru by Fireboy. You put it under like a house beat.
Yeah,
that kind of. Is that how you interrupt?
Yeah. That's
how you interrupt. Okay.
Right? But they, like, over time you learn to do that in a minimally invasive way.
Oh, okay.
Right. So you're trying to make it sound like this is part of the song.
Okay.
It's harder to do it when you just start out.
Okay.
But the more you do it, the more you know like what is minimally invasive on people's trains of thought. Because if you go to a proper like a techno,
mm-hmm.
like party,
yeah,
it's if you're not trained to it, it sounds like the same thing the whole time.
Yeah.
That's the job. It's like, how can you play for 2 hours and nobody notices when the song changed?
I see.
It's just like
it's just continuous.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't like, if you were not born into it, or that's not what you grew up with, it doesn't make sense. But and I was one of those people that didn't make sense.
How long did it take you to train your senses to this? How long did it take you to get?
I just took one lesson. Like, I just needed to understand.
Who taught you this lesson?
It was not something that I learned. It was something that I observed.
Okay.
About what it is about, like, techno that makes it good.
Okay.
It's an audio experience.
Yeah.
It's about, like, how hard can they hit your senses, your auditory senses, for you to feel something.
So me, I don't, and I'm very honest, I don't enjoy it now as much. I can't go as, like, you know, a whole event, and that's what, you know, I'll listen to. But what is, like, how can I experience, how can I get that auditory, like, sensation? How can I feel it? What do I have to do? Because the market is big. Like, I see people enjoy these things, and it's just the same thing. Like, some people, you know, have Afrobeats. They enjoy Afrobeat, but some people don't enjoy Afrobeat. And so, you know, I can tell them that, okay, maybe to enjoy Afrobeat, you need to just maybe know the dance, or, like, you need to be able to...
Yes.
Yeah, so for the auditory experience, how do I train myself to enjoy true on true? Because I watch some of these videos on YouTube, and I sometimes skip. I'm looking for the mixes, but... I don't really find it.
It's not something you enjoy at home, really.
Oh, okay.
When you go to a properly built, like, electronic music venue,
okay,
their sound systems are fucking insane. So they are, like, loud and clear.
I see.
The bass is strong, and it hits you.
It shocks. Okay.
So that's one aspect. The low end is one aspect. That's like the best. Some of the best techno is German.
I see. Is that that's where Avicii is from?
I'm not sure if Avicii is German.
Yeah,
but it could be. Might be Dutch or something.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But you can Google that. Yeah. The low end is the first thing. It's like, can you feel that bass?
Okay.
Right. Very important. The next thing is, how loud and sharp can we make that high end, that it doesn't tear your eardrums, but it's crisp.
You can hear it
very well. And how much can we modulate that into, like, a billion different sounds? So
when you say modulate, is it like change, like, the pitch?
There's so many, like, ways change to, like, affect sound.
Okay.
To make it different. So it's like, if you know the basic principles of, like, oscillators, they're just like waves. They're basic sine waves. And all music is built out of that.
Okay.
So it's how much can we use these electronic devices to modulate the sound to create an experience.
Okay.
So it's about the delivery, first of all, and about, like, maintaining a train of thought, like a singular train of thought from the DJ to the audience, while making it different over time.
I see.
So that's the basic science of, like, how techno works.
Okay.
So the first time I understood it, because I've been in Toronto, like, and I'd heard, like, a lot of electronic music, maybe even in Nigeria.
Yeah.
But the first time I went to Berlin, and I went to one of the clubs, you then see all of these elements come together. Like, why clubs are so dark.
So Toronto venues don't do justice to...
A lot of them don't.
Oh, I see.
A lot of them don't. It's industrial. Like, the walls are built in a certain way.
Mm.
The sound systems are, like, set up in a certain way.
Okay.
Like, there's a reason, like, speakers are supposed to be high up.
Yeah, line array is high up.
So,
yeah.
Like, it's so that it's not at your ear level, so that they can blast higher frequencies through the air. And you can hear it, but it doesn't hurt your ears.
Oh, yeah.
And then the bass is low, so you can hit your chest. Right? And then there's minimal lighting, so that your visual senses are dulled.
Yeah.
Or your auditory senses are heightened.
Okay.
Because you can't see anything. All you see is, like, flashing lights.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the beat
pounds. Yeah, the beat pounds. Oh, I see. So it's a total experience. You can't enjoy it sitting at home. Have you ever, maybe, I wouldn't say fantasized, but have you ever, you know, thought about building your own venue?
I've considered it, but I know like that is not feasible.
Yeah, it's not. But
hopefully, like, you know, if we make it in life, yeah. Because one of the things that I really want is to bring that type of experience to like African music, where we get the best of what we already have, which is like ours is about like it's a lot of storytelling. It's about the movements. It's about dance. But then there's also something to be said about like the actual physical experience of music.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I feel you. So that's good. So to ask about your events, what does it take to put together an A Freak Like Me event or any other event that you, what's the process like for you end to end? You know, if you can run through it quickly, up until people start ticketing at the door, from the conception of the idea, promo, you know, what does it take to put together an A Freak Like Me event?
I think it's pretty typical. The basics are the same.
Yeah.
We have a platform.
Okay.
Already, we do African electronic dance music. So every time we do an event, we're always looking for ways to elevate the experience of it.
Yeah.
And that's literally what I just explained.
Yeah.
What the factors that we're trying to bring together. The storytelling of African music, the dynamic nature of like sound.
Yeah.
We're always striving to like find better venues.
Okay.
And like with better sound systems.
Yeah.
So that we can like really push.
Yeah, okay.
So the first thing is finding the venue, obviously. Like getting a place that we can have good sound.
Okay.
So it's either DIY or it's like a really dope club.
Yeah.
So once that is secure, I always make sure that we sort of like lock down the venue before we even think of like announcing an event.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it sometimes like slows down the process, but that's the first thing. Yeah. So on my side, it's now thinking about how are we delivering the experience? What is the sound going to be like?
Okay.
Who is going to handle that part? Do I have to be logging speakers on that day?
Oh, okay.
Or do we have somebody that is going to manage that process?
Yeah.
So I worry about that. And then capacity. Like, once I know, okay, this is the room.
Okay.
This is how it's going to look. This is how it's going to sound.
Oh, yeah.
Now I worry about, like, who's coming.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So then I switch into, like, this is how I'm going to market it to people. Mm. So there are some times where, and if I use the anniversary that might still be upcoming when this comes out, it's that we already have, there's already a story, there's 5 years worth of stories.
Oh yeah.
So I don't really need to push the envelope in terms of like explaining what the experience is going to be. So this time I didn't do much of that. I was just like reminding people
that
like,
come, this event is happening, just
come 5 years. So please come through, you know what's happening.
Oh yeah.
So maybe in the next couple of like in the next few days I might like pivot to like trying to describe what we have in store for people.
Okay.
But usually that is the first thing.
Okay.
Like doing your with the music that you're using on your promotional material.
Oh yeah.
To the visuals, you're trying to like describe what people might feel when they come to your event.
Oh okay.
So obviously the extent to which you can do that is limited by your resources.
Okay.
But in the end, that's always the goal. You're trying to communicate a feeling to people. And if people can buy into that feeling, then no matter how many people show up to your event, you would have a great event.
Okay. I say I have two more questions for you. And you've recently, like, you know, I don't know if, I wouldn't say recently because you're a creative, so probably you started that from some time ago, but camera, photography, videography, when did you get into that? And probably proximity of being close to a photographer, or like how did you get into photography and videography?
That was literally one of the first things I had done. I was in university, taking a few photography courses, but I had before I went into computing science, I was supposed to go to film school.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to be a filmmaker.
Oh.
But at that time, you know, I was a level-headed child, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew that, okay, arts are not the most impressive, like, lane to go on when you are from a Nigerian household. Not that my family was particularly adverse to it.
Oh, yeah.
But you just know what your surroundings are like. You want to pick something that's, like, lucrative.
Oh, yeah.
So I went into, computer science.
Oh, okay.
What I had said then was, like, when I finish, I'll go to film school.
Okay.
So that was the plan. That's why, partly why I moved to Toronto. I was going to, get a job.
Oh, yeah.
And then enroll in Toronto Film School.
Okay.
But after, a year or two, I was like, I don't really need to go to film school to be a filmmaker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so that means you're even ahead of, because now with content creation, people are like, you don't need, with how much resources people can, how much resources are available at the fingertips for people to create film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people feel like they don't need to go to film school. But then at the time, that was not the sentiment.
I was thinking Nollywood. You know, when I say I wanted to be a filmmaker, I was like, my vision had always been like, I'm going to, you know, get myself settled and go back home and start, like, become a director.
Oh, yeah.
Become a film director. But then when you look at the steps that are involved, if you have a background in, like, project management, it would quickly occur to you that, it's either I have a lot of money,
okay,
or, like, I'm the baddest
at this craft
already
before
anyone would even look your way.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I had to, like, dial it back a little bit, dial back the ambition at that point and say, okay, maybe I need to go to work, maybe save some money, find some capital,
okay,
and then I can think of commissioning my first, like, body of work.
Oh, yeah.
Becoming a producer director.
Oh, okay.
But never got to that point.
I mean, I feel like with what you've shared today, and, you know, how, like, Afrique Like Me came about, and all, you know, what you're trying to do for, the eco-electronic music, with time, as it matures, it kind of deserves, like, a documentary, right, so that people can actually see the story. But, you know, to wrap it up here today is, like, what advice would you give to, I wanted to box it and say, what advice would you give to a DJ? What advice would you give to someone trying to come up with an event? But what advice would you give to an up-and-coming producer, creative/producer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what challenges have you overcome that you think, you know, people can just skip through that?
Challenges that I've faced, I don't think there's any skipping. It's
You have to go through it.
You have to go through it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's what makes you better. Not that I'm not saying you have to suffer. You don't have to.
Okay.
You don't have to suffer. I don't think I suffered.
Oh, yeah.
To do anything. But it's not easy. You really have to want to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think I can say that for almost anything.
Yeah.
Is if you want something bad enough,
okay,
you would weather storms to get to that thing.
Yeah.
It's get it or die trying.
Oh, yeah.
Type of thing. So that's not really advice. It's just how life works.
Yeah, you have to go through the
pain or
the process.
Yes,
and
whatever pains come with growing, you have to go through it.
Okay.
The one thing I can say might be advice is find your lane.
Okay.
You have to know what fits you, or what works for you, and this beginning of whatever it is you're doing should really be like about that, about finding what works for you.
Oh yeah.
You shouldn't be boxed in like at the beginning.
Yeah.
You should explore and like test things out.
Okay.
Don't be scared to learn.
Oh yeah.
try stuff out until like you feel comfortable
somewhere,
and then that's your lane, and now you forge ahead on that lane, only having to branch when you feel like something is not working.
Oh yeah, I feel.
That first step is very vital.
Okay,
because if you think about it, like a marked example of that would be the coming of Amapiano. Let's use the DJs that came out of that.
Okay.
Right. A lot of people became DJs because they really loved
Amapiano. Yeah.
Right. What next?
The market is
huge, yeah. But it's not huge enough that it will sustain the number of people that became Amapiano DJs. You've built your entire identity
around
that.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have to go back to the drawing board and learn new skills.
Yeah, for other types of music.
Yeah, for other things. So it's about don't be afraid to like explore, like
just be
constantly
rough.
Learn and find like what it is that works for you. It doesn't have to be about what is currently what everybody else finds attractive at the moment.
It doesn't even have to be about the audience, because it has to start from you.
It has to start from you. Because that's the outcome, that people were into it because everybody else was into it.
Yeah.
So now when everybody else moves on to something else,
you're
left holding the bag.
Yeah.
Type of thing. So you should always like find your inspiration, find your own path.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter if everyone else moves on,
mm-hmm.
you're still doing your own thing.
Yeah. So makes sense.
You'd be happy with yourself.
Makes sense. Thank you so much for sharing your story today. Really appreciate it. Super interesting.
My pleasure.
You know, so I'll be at your event with my free ticket.
Let's go. Bring everybody.
Oh yes,
we're happy to have you.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Yeah.